It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by the Honorable Rick Crawford. Mr. Crawford represents Arkansas in the House of Representatives and is a member of the House Agriculture Committee. Great to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
So I'm trying to remember, was this the first farm bill for you or second farm bill that you've done?
This is actually my third, because if you recall, we had a first bite at the apple in 2012, and we didn't get that one across the finish line, so we had to come back at it again, and we finally got it done. So this is actually our third. So we marked up two first go-around, and this one is my third.
I bet you would like to end the year with having only marked up three when you roll into 2019, but it I guess, begs the question of where are we?
Well, we're under a motion to reconsider, which is good till June 22nd. The reason that we did that is because there were some folks who sort of held out for, we want to vote on immigration before we vote on the farm bill. So we have a deal in principle. Now, it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, hold up their end of the deal, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say yes, they will. Many of the amendments that they offered were not only made in order but were even passed, some of them by voice vote, on the floor and became part of the farm bill, and yet they withheld their votes because they felt like they wanted to vote on immigration. And so, you know, I don't necessarily like that tactic, but the agreement we have now is that you're going to get an opportunity to vote on immigration. I'm good with that because I'll vote for the Goodlatte bill that'll come to the floor. I don't know if we have enough votes to pass it, but that's not the agreement. We couldn't guarantee passage. We could only guarantee the vote. On the other hand, these are a whole lot of members that actually are now going to get the opportunity to vote on a conservative farm bill that maybe felt like in the previous years they didn't have a conservative farm bill. So now I hope they'll hold up their end of the deal, because we're going to hold up our end of the deal.
On the other side of the Capitol, you have a Senate farm bill now through the Senate Ag Committee, and we've heard from that side, they're ready to take it to the floor. Get after it. That's good news as far as farm bill in general.
Well, it is, and I think it cleared committee without a whole lot of controversy. That's encouraging. On the other hand, when it comes to the Senate floor, then you're likely to see some fireworks. You're likely to see, an AGI test. You're likely to see some constraints on crop insurance. You're likely to see an increase in active engagement requirement and a variety of things that I find troubling and that could present a problem in conference. They probably will not have a nutrition title that closely aligns with ours. And so, mainly we want to get their farm bill to conference. But the further apart they are from our farm bill, the more difficult it is to reconcile the two. So that probably portends a lengthy conference. So we'll see what happens.
One area that you fought for and were successful in, getting cotton back into Title I of the 2014 Farm Bill that happened back in February, is it what you had hoped?
Yeah, I think it's going to work out well. In fact, that was part of the disaster relief bill that cleared the House back in February, as you mentioned. It was important to get that passed before we began to mark up the farm bill for budgetary reasons. So bringing that into Title I and maintaining a baseline that was reasonable, we had to bring it in advance of the actual farm bill markup. So what you'll see as it's now eligible for PLC, price loss coverage, price loss coverage is tied to cost of production. So when you look at 36 cents roughly, that doesn't sound really good if you're a cotton producer, unless you combine that with the oilseed. So you've got the lint, which is around 36 cents, and the oilseed, which is not reflected in the reference price, but you'll make up the difference in cost of production on the oilseed side. So if you were going to see a published reference price that reflected both, you'd probably be somewhere in the 70 to 72 cent range, which is pretty close to where you want to be on price on the cost of production. So I don't want people to freak out over that. I think farmers know that and understand it. Cotton farmers are aware that that's kind of how we did it. We want to, like I said, want to hold that baseline, make sure we had a good number from which to write this next farm bill, and I think we achieved that.
And that happened really on the heels or about the same time that the secretary made the designation for the cottonseed assistance, the ginning assistance. Did that help?
It absolutely did, and it wasn't the first time. It was really kind of what saved a lot of cotton farmers in the previous year. So he exercised that authority, which he had under the Farm Bill, and we had to go back in and just sort of reiterate our position on PLC that really kind of we thought Secretary Vilsack didn't agree with us, but we thought he had the statutory authority quite clearly to be able to designate cotton as an oil seed for the purposes of participating in PLC. So we didn't get that done under the previous secretary. I'm not sure Secretary Perdue would have even done it, but he did reauthorize the ginning cost share program, and then in the interim that helped until such time as we got cotton into Title I, which we did in the disaster relief appropriations bill.
Another area that you I would say have kind of held close to you is trade, and in particular Cuba. Where are we with that, and is there a future for reopening Cuba?
You know what? I think the engagement that you've seen here this week with Kim Jong-un means that President Trump is very pragmatic in his approach to dealing with world leaders. So if he's willing to go and sit down with Kim Jong-un with his history and with, you know, the rhetoric and the activity that we've seen in North Korea, then I think it's reasonable to think he'd probably take another look at Cuba and sort of reconsider his position with regard to how we are engaged there or not engaged, as the case may be. So, you know, it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot. If you just simply lift the credit restriction, which is currently in place, I think that you would see a huge turnaround in Cuba, in their economy, in their attitude. I've been to Cuba a few times, and I can tell you that the Cuban people are very warm and welcoming of Americans. I'm not talking about the regime. The regime is what it is, and we know the history of the regime. But I'm not trying to help the regime. I'm trying to help the Cuban people. And in doing that, we help ourselves. Because not only do we provide a market for our ag goods, which will only improve over time, we also address a strategic interest of our presence in Cuba, not only economically but politically. Because if we don't participate in Cuba, we leave a void there that will be filled by China, Russia, maybe even Iran, and others that don't have our interests at heart, keeping in mind that they're 90 miles off the coast of Florida. So not only is it in our interest economically to help rural America, it is eminently critical that we address this from a strategic standpoint.
It's good to see you. Thanks for the work you're doing. Wish you the best.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Again, it's Representative Rick Crawford from Arkansas, member of the House Agriculture Committee, on today's Agribusiness Report.